Ted was right that the scriptures for this morning do have a somewhat darkened tone to them. They have quite a prophetic tone to them. When you begin the season of Advent, you begin with it being a season that has an acknowledgement of darkness in the world, yearning for, waiting for, being alert to the light that is coming into the world. And so the passage from Isaiah is one which is looking at return from exile in Persia. Likewise, the gospel lesson is one which reflects the return from exile in Persia, because in it Jesus' teaching his disciples is also reflecting the prophecy of the prophet Joel from the Old Testament. And so a lot of the images are the same. And the Son of Man image is one which comes from Persia, from the return from exile. And Jesus chose that as a title to refer to himself as the Son of Man. And so, speaking in his prophetic mode, listen for Jesus' words to his disciples then and now. In those days after that suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as a branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. May God bless too this reading from the gospel, for this is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I have a photograph that I took recently, only a couple of months ago. I took it at a local Lowe's home improvement store in October, a place where I had other adventures. But in this one photograph, to the left side, and this is one photo, to the left side, there were movable, full-size, animated, talking zombies dressed in tuxedos for Halloween. In the center of the picture, there are plastic pumpkins and all kinds of other decorations for Thanksgiving. And on the right, on shelves rising all the way to the ceiling, was the wide world of Christmas inflatables. 3 months of decorations and celebrations whizzing by at breakneck speed in one photo. I'll be glad to show it to you. I think we're going to see more of that in the years to come. This a frenzy of commercial promotion that seeks to carry us along or perhaps drag us along. It's so easy to get snagged by that. I love a story of the wonderful comedian Carol Burnett, who we love to watch on TV for so many years, that one cold, blustery day in New York City in the Christmas holiday season, when she was in such a hurry to tend to all the things she had to do, Carol Burnett got out of a cab in Manhattan, and all of her got out of the cab except for part of her winter coat, upon which she then closed the cab door. The cab then started slowly pulling away from the curb, And not being wanted to be dragged, Carol Burnett then started running alongside the cab's back door for nearly a block and a half. Now, luckily, an observant pedestrian saw the cab and the jogger coming and flagged the cab down and got her unstuck from the door. The cabbie, of course, inquired if she was all right. And Carol Burnett, gasping, replied, "Yes. How much more do I owe you?" Is that Carol Burnett or what? To me, this seems like an apt description of what this holiday season can come to feel like, and perhaps much of life itself, that we can be snagged by forces and momentums that we cannot control, and yet when a time of rest comes along, we feel that we still owe something for the experience. Do we really, truly owe something to the momentum of the culture? Do we owe it our time? Do we owe it our energy? Do we owe it our joy? Do we owe it our faith? I did one year venture out on Black Friday. I usually swear not to do that. But I did venture out on Black Friday. I found myself in a new toy store in a mall looking for a specific card game. And beside me, there was a frazzled woman, and apparently she was there with her mother, and she said, "Don't they have coupons for this store?" she said, exasperated. Our mom replied, "I don't think so." And the woman hissed back, "I might as well go to Toys R Us. For God's sake, everybody's supposed to have a sale on Black Friday." And I thought with a mental and a spiritual sigh, for God's sake, having a sale should be truly irrelevant. So every year, we preachers go through our Advent Christmas file. We want to see what ideas and sermons we've said over past seasons. I read a sermon I preached a few years ago when the housing market was crashing and economic malaise had just begun. I remember we thought it was a momentary upheaval, right? A problem that would quickly subside. It seemed to me back then, though, during that Christmas season, people were doing something different. They were doing some reflection. And Christmas was not quite so frenzied that year, and mall shopping less frantic, and driving less insane. It even felt that people were asking more questions about whether we really had to waste so much or spend so much or consume so much or stress so much in order to experience the mystery of Christmas. And that Advent that year became more reflective and more expectant and more waiting and hoping. And of course, years have passed since then, and something does feel different. We don't seem to be waiting for the rebound from economic malaise as much, but we still seem to be waiting for something. There's not so much, perhaps, individual anxiety and exhaustion, but we like Israel, getting close to returning to a promised land, we are looking somehow for a lot more. We're looking for something deeper and more precious than we once expected. We're waiting and watching, we're asking, we're wondering. And our mood is perhaps more questioning and serious in these days, and our hope is perhaps more focused, and our spirits are yearning to share a faith that is deeper, maybe more profound, maybe more informed, even as the challenges of modern life and the situations in the world seem to be difficult and stark. We're asking what faith can do to inform us in these times. And that is different. And that is precious. So right here at the beginning of Advent, this is a good time for us to pause and seek a sense of who we are and where we perceive God to be in our time and in our days, and be drawn into God's realm instead of just trying to interject God momentarily into our supposed reality. This was the need of Israel's people when the prophet Isaiah plaintively cried out that the people were feeling forsaken and drifting from God, who had led them in times past. It seemed as if God must be hardening their hearts so that they would no longer have a sense of the divine presence the way Moses and the wandering Israelites did. And yet they were on the verge of a promised land. There's one verse in all that that to me seems to sum the problem up differently, though, a clue that it's not God's distance from us, but it's the closed hearts and the diminished expectations of the people that make God seem far away. One translation, it's an old style, but I like it. And Isaiah says that this way, "There is no one that calls upon thy name that bestirs himself to take hold of thee." The old language sometimes says it well. How rarely do we bestir ourselves to take hold of God? It's even become an ecclesial joke, albeit a sad one. How many people will show up at the Christmas season and not return until Easter or even the next Christmas? Because we are not easily bestirred in our times. In those moments of sheer honesty, even Isaiah acknowledges that neither Moses nor the wandering tribes were so very clear about God's nearness. For as Moses points out, they fitted their worship of God in between yearning for bread, complaining for water, or building golden calves in whose direction they might bow. We know that God tried first through prophets, then through Jesus to teach us that life is not a one-way street through which we are to be dragged or moved or pushed. Because if we think of life as being a line from birth to death and we have to mainly tick off the minutes and count the steps, then there truly isn't much surprise or wonder for us to take hold of, is there? And this is the way our society and world and even human nature tend to think. But the advent of Jesus as a child, his presence in our lives, the experience of his return that's anticipated in his words in Mark, they tell a different dimension of human life. It's as if we're living in two time zones at the same time, the time zone of human history, but also the time zone of God's eternity. It's sometimes very hard to see that divine history when all we know at present is shaped by our own daily experience up to now. But God is everywhere, and God is all times. Advent needs to be a quiet, pensive, open, honest, yearning time, unlike any other time of the year. One of my favorite theologians, Charles Schulz, drew a Peanuts cartoon strip I'll never forget. It was one of those long ones that comes on Sunday with the color. Yeah, so it's a little wordy. But Charlie and Peppermint Patty are leaning against a tree. And she asked, "What do you think security is, Chuck?" "Security?" He says, "Security is sleeping in the back seat of the car when you're a little kid. And you've been somewhere with your mom and dad. It's night and you're riding home in the dark and you can sleep in the back seat. And you don't have to worry about anything. Your mom and dad are in the front seat. And they do all the worrying. They take care of everything." In the next scene, Peppermint Patty has a great big smile on her face and she says, "That's real neat." But Charlie Brown can't restrain himself. But it doesn't last. Suddenly you're grown up and it can never be that way again. Suddenly it's over. And you never get to sleep in the back seat again. Never. "Never?" she says with a look of dismay. He says, "Absolutely never." In the last frame, both of them have dismal looks, but in a spontaneous moment, perhaps a moment of faith, Peppermint Patty says, "Hold my hand, Chuck. Hold my hand." Our text today hammer down on watching and waiting. And they do reflect times when God's people were in despair, and yet they still held this glimmer of hope, a glimmer of restoration. Isaiah's people in exile in Babylon, yearning for home and temple, feeling alienated from God, but reminding God that they were God's creation, God's potter's clay. And Mark's congregation, facing the impending doom of Jerusalem at the hands of the Roman Empire, and then their own rejection from local synagogues and Greco-Roman culture, yet held an ancient vision of a mystical, powerful dawning of God's future that would come at any minute. You know, I'm certain that the prophet Isaiah faced many people who said, "Give it up, old prophet. Promised land is a thing of the past. God's departed from us." The plaintive cry of Isaiah is much like that. He cries out to God, "Oh, that you would rend the heavens, that you would come down." Isaiah yearns for some sign of nearness from God, who seems to have turned God's back on the people. But you remember, Isaiah doesn't stop there, for in the last verse he proclaims, "God's the potter and we're the clay to be molded." And Isaiah proceeds to call the people to movement and into action and to live in expectation, even if they don't see any hope. As little did they know that in little more than a generation, a new empire would send them back to their home, to their promised land. Sometimes I think the waiting itself can become a spiritual discipline. It opens our hearts and it opens our schedules to the inbreaking of a new grace. And maybe that's the meaning of incarnation, God becoming human in the person of Jesus, because God's always been around. It's only when we await God's becoming apparent to us that we have the openness to see that God has been and remains here. And that's especially important when life's events come along that cause us to pause and halt our momentum. We need to recognize that need to wait and listen and speak the name. The birth of a child, the last child leaving the nest, sudden change of career, difficult impact of economic uncertainties, a crucial or a critical or even tragic turn of health, retirement, confronting midlife and reassessing life's core meaning. For all times to wait and to listen. Finally, there's a famous old rabbinical saying that says, if you are planting a tree and you hear that the Messiah has come, finish planting the tree and then go and inquire. Don't just wait and anticipate, but be working the work of God all the while, so that not only do you respond to God, but you also have options available to serve God, to honor God. So friends, this year, this new Christian liturgical year, Advent is the beginning of the Christian liturgical year, this Advent of awaiting the coming of Christ, this Christmas of celebrating the coming of Christ, let's learn to wait spiritually. And as we do, let's accept the giftedness of waiting. Let's accept the embrace of friends. Let's accept the quiet centering of the Holy Spirit. Let's accept the deepening awareness that we're not only celebrants of the incarnation, but participants in the incarnation. So watch, wait, keep awake, be ready. And when you find yourself saying, "Hold my hand, God," you may be very surprised to find that God is indeed holding your hand. Amen.